If you're like me, getting back in shape is always a goal, but that's what it remains, a goal. That's why I'm excited about our new advertiser, FitBod. FitBod is a fitness app that tailors workouts to fit your life, your goals, your gear, and even your schedule. It's like having a personal trainer in your pocket. Whether you're a gym rat or just trying to get back in the groove like me, FitBod evolves with you, tweaking routines to push your limits and maximize your gains. And FitBod keeps things fun, mixing in different exercises, reps, supersets, and circuits. It's like a new challenge every time you work out. It's time to ditch the boring routines and kickstart your fitness journey. Add FitBod to your workout essentials. Join FitBod today to get your personalized workout plan. Get 25% off your subscription by trying the app for free at fitbod.me/Zabe. Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's fitbod.me/Zabe.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. Today on the ZabeCast, I'll reconnect with my long-lost former college roommate from UC Santa Barbara, John Peterson. And wait till you hear how he survived as a young basketball coach, making $3,000 a year. A good reason those little bottles of eye drops cost so much. The Lamar Jackson saga just jumped up a notch, and so too did that of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. Your bonus 40-minute edition of Pure Me is locked and loaded, so buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. Thank you for downloading. Let's get right into it. Lamar Jackson on his Twitter feed said he asked for a trade from the Ravens as far back as March 2nd. I won't bother to read you all the verbiage of it. We get it. Yada, yada. Love the fans. Got to do what's best for my career, couldn't come to terms, blah, blah, yada, yada. Fine, whatever. So now we are officially in Baltimore in what we would call the awkward phase of the relationship. How far can the Ravens go pretending like, no, everything's fine, we may franchise tag him and we'll wait for him to report to camp. You can't force a quarterback, not a former MVP, into screwing on a smile and saying, okay, all right, I guess I'll play for you for 1 year. I don't think you can. I don't think they will. I think now they're going to have to trade him, and I think now they're going to get less than two number ones for Lamar Jackson. But I may be wrong about this. Now, speaking of the two number ones, I was having a text exchange with a couple of my Raven friends. I do have a couple of them. And, you know, they've been pretty much even keel about this whole thing. One of them, Kyle, said he saw this coming from, you know, miles and miles away. He knew this was going to be the case and is not upset about it per se. He's just, I knew they were not going to pay him the amount of money he wanted guaranteed. So this was inevitable. My response to him about the fact that nobody is stepping up with the, hey, we're going to write an offer for him. we're going to make the Ravens match this offer, is about the two number ones. I said in a text, I go, you guys remember when teams would flip two ones in a trade like it was nothing? Sometimes for wide receivers and other not super duper important, hard to find players. And I believe Kyle said, no, I don't remember that. And I go, oh, well, here, let me help you. The first one that came to mind was Joey Galloway to the Dallas Cowboys from the Seahawks for two number one picks. Galloway produced a bit, but really wasn't a difference maker. Then you had Keyshawn Johnson, who went to Tampa Bay from the Jets for two number one picks. The Jets, I believe, after that trade had four number ones in the first round. More recently, Khalil Mack goes to the Bears for two firsts and some swappage besides that. Laremy Tunsil, offensive lineman, goes from Miami to Houston with two number ones back to Miami, but they threw in Kenny Stills and there was some other swappage as well. But still, two number ones were involved in that deal from Houston to Miami. Now, you have to apply the Bill O'Brien idiot discount factor to that because he single-handedly made some of the dumbest moves ever in recent vintage as GM of that team and also the coach. But how about Jamal Adams? A safety goes from the Jets to Seattle for two number ones, a third, and a live body safety. Hell, Jalen Ramsey went from the Jaguars to the Rams for two ones and a fourth. There may be even more trades involving two ones for players a lot less impactful than a MVP quarterback in Lamar Jackson. So don't tell me it's about the two number ones. I still rest on the laurels of it's that they don't quite know this cat. Other teams don't know what he is, how he works, what is it going to be like once they get in bed with him to the tune of whatever number they have to spend on salary plus the picks, which the picks are not the deal breaker, but there'll be so much investment, I don't know if teams are going to feel comfortable. But that said, do a little noodling on two number one picks. You're telling me that, oh, Jalen Ramsey, a corner, a good one, who now has been passed around again, is worth two number ones and a fourth, but Lamar Jackson, a quarterback, is not? I mean, come on now. Then there's the agent thing. I'm going to alert everybody that this is like a rare occurrence in which the sun lines up perfectly with the gap in the stones at Stonehenge to perfectly cast a ray of light at just the right spot in which me and Bomani Jones of the extremely low-rated, nobody watches it, Game Theory on HBO, me and Bomani Jones are like this. We are Hang Dai, as the saying goes, and I believe it's Chinese. It was used in Deadwood between Swearingen. Let's see, Hang Dai Chinese, Hang Dai definition. I just try to Google this on the fly. Hang Dai meaning. Okay. I could have done this before the podcast, but I didn't. Oh, here it is. Brothers. We are brothers. The meaning of Hang Dai is like-minded partners or brothers. For once, me and Bomani Jones are Hang Dai. Here was his take on Game Theory about this no agent thing and why Lamar Jackson is not helping himself by not having a proper agent.
It's a narrative that Lamar Jackson is hurting his contract by being his own agent. People should have never told y'all this word narrative. Narrative implies that this is just some fictional story that people have come up with, right? So this is why I believe Lamar Jackson should have an agent and why I do think that doing this is hurting him. It's two things. One, I remember I was talking to Fonte about this. This is why, like 20 years ago now. And he said the importance of having a manager was you can't call those people motherfuckers, but sometimes somebody has to. Right? they are also, no matter what a negotiation is, going to insult you. The first offer is going to be an insult. I don't think my agent talks to me until the third. If you're Lamar Jackson, you only negotiate a contract when you negotiate a contract. How good are you going to be at negotiating a contract if you've only literally done it one time in your life, right? And so I think people think that having a relationship with an agent or a representative is just this person who just pops in and goes and they talk and they get you some money and then you walk out the door and you're like, oh, I could do that myself. I mean, you can, right? You can drive a car with your feet, as Chris Rock said, right? You can, but chances are your time is too precious and you should let somebody else handle that.
Wow, there you go. Could not agree more. Not that my representation in the radio business has ever called anyone in the industry at any of my stops, quote unquote, motherfuckers, but he might have said a few things along the way. But that is true. It keeps you clean. Keeps you clean to them. And it keeps them clean to you during what is inevitably the bare knuckle process of negotiating. And with that in mind, I bring you the top three on a Top Three Tuesday worst fictional negotiations of all time. Number three. The Michael Scott Paper Company negotiating with Michael Wallace, or David Wallace, excuse me, in the office about getting their jobs back.
To expedite these negotiations, we are prepared to make you a very generous offer.
And we are prepared to reject that offer.
Michael, you haven't even heard.
Never accept their first offer. What is your second offer?
$12,000.
Are you kidding me? That is insultingly low. I don't even want to hear what your first offer was.
What do you hear?
Here's the situation. Your company is 4 weeks old. I know this business. I know what suppliers are charging. I know you can't be making very much money. I don't know how your prices are so low, but I know it can't keep up that way. I'm sure you're scared. Probably in debt. It's the best offer you're going to get.
I'll see your situation and I'll raise you a situation. Your company is losing clients left and right. You have a stockholder meeting coming up, and you are going to have to explain to them why your most profitable branch is bleeding. So they may be looking for a little change in the CFO. So I don't think I need to wait out Dunder Mifflin. I think I just have to wait out you.
Absolutely brilliant. Number two, top three worst negotiations, fictional category. Homer negotiating for the number of blackjack decks at an Indian casino.
I thought you guys lived off the land. How come you're selling junk to jerks like us?
We used to live and farm in a bountiful valley. Then the river was dammed to make that lake by our ancient enemy, the beaver.
Why don't you just chase the beavers away?
Unfortunately, the beaver is also our god. In retrospect, it was a poor choice.
You people are guests in our country, and the beaver have no right guests to treat you that way. If I get back your land, will you promise to build a casino on it?
Sure. And when we do, your breakfast will be comped.
How many decks will your blackjack dealers use?
Eight.
Three.
Four.
Deal, my brother.
Eight, three, four. Deal, my brother, and your breakfast will be comped. And the number one fictional bad negotiation of all time has to be Jerry Lundegaard, Fargo, with that damn undercoating.
We sat right here in this room and went over this and over this.
Yeah, but that true coat.
I sat right here and said I didn't want any true coat.
Yeah, but I'm saying that true coat, you don't get it, you get oxidation problems. It'll cost you a heck of a lot more than $500.
You're sitting there, you're talking in circles, you're talking like we didn't go over this already.
Yeah. We'll see where it goes from here, but stay tuned. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers is going to have another appearance, I bet, soon on the Pat McAfee show to give his updated side of the story now that Brian Gutekunst at the owners' meetings has dropped a bit of a truth bomb, this courtesy of Matt Schneidman of The Athletic. What happened this offseason? Why couldn't you guys get together on whether or not Rodgers would return for one more season at least with the Green Bay Packers when he was under contract.
I don't want to say repair the relationship, but the last 2 years after he, you know, said everything he did a couple of years ago, then he comes out a couple of weeks ago and says you basically went behind his back to shop him and he didn't seem too pleased. From your perspective, how did the last couple of months kind of transpire?
Yeah, I didn't really take his comments like that, and it's certainly not true. I mean, I think, you know, as we got out of the offseason or after the season, and we had a good conversation, and then, you know, we're going to have some follow-up conversations. And our inability to reach him or for him to respond in any way, I think at that point, then we just kind of had to, I had to do my job and kind of reach out and understanding that a trade could be possible and see who was interested, but that shopping was never really part of that.
So when you gave him that contract extension, you've said publicly your intention was for him to not just play last season, to play beyond that. At what point did it shift to, okay, we need to move on?
Yeah, I think so. I think obviously it was a disappointing season, right? And you come out of the season, you have a lot of conversations, not only with Aaron, but with the rest of the team, coaches and everybody. And as you go through that process, you kind of get an idea of where you're going to move to, you know, as a team, how you're going to go forward. And I think I was really looking forward to the conversations with Aaron to see how he fit into that. Those never transpired. So, there came a time where we kind of had to make some, you know, decisions. So we went through his representatives to try to kind of talk to him where we were going with our team. And at that point, they informed us they would like to be traded to the Jets.
But you just said you did try and reach out to have those conversations,
oh, yeah,
is what you
sense.
Said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything.
So there you go. This is some grade school bullshit by Rodgers. Grow up, man. Be a pro, okay? I know many of you are going to go, Zabe, been trying to tell you this for a long time. And there's some that are going to say, oh, you can't trust Goody. He's a snake. He's a liar. Of course, he's going to paint it in the most beneficial light to him and the organization. It doesn't matter, really, who you think is more truthful in what happened in the offseason, because here is the basic fact of the matter. It was Rodgers who said, I need some time to think about whether I'm playing football next year. The Green Bay Packers Incorporated were never in doubt about playing football as an organization next year. With the whole 53-man roster, with all the accessory coaches and administrators and staffers and trainers and ticket takers and everything else. Oh, no. There was never a doubt. Oh, hey, Green Bay Packers, Inc., are you playing football next year? Of course we are. Do you know the mortgage on this facility? Yes, 1,000%. Okay, Rodgers, do you want to play? I'll get back to you, man. Once he said, look, I need time away to think about it, it was incumbent upon him to be a pro and to be proactive and to communicate like a professional with the team that employed him, employs him still, and shoveled $100 million guaranteed onto his plate. And yet, this is what Goody said transpired. Of course Rodgers was going to do this. Man, does he have some deep, deep issues. All this talk about simple gratitude and appreciation, it's bullshit. He ain't living what he's preaching, Rodgers. If he was preaching it, then he could be more forthcoming and tell the Packers 2 weeks after the Super Bowl, look, let's go our separate ways. Nothing personal. I want the challenge of playing somewhere else. You guys want to play love. Let's make this happen. Let's make this a good divorce. Could have done that. Didn't do that. But oh, I love playing in Green Bay so much, did you? You might have said, I want to come back. I know it's going to be a big number to swallow my salary, but I feel like we can do some damage this year. And I know the Jordan Love thing's a problem, but hey, you know, people do get injured. You know, can he stick it out one more year as my backup? He could have said that, but he didn't say that because that's not what he wanted. And now he wants to spin it like, hey man, they were shopping me. Something changed. Here comes the McAfee appearance coming down in 3, 2, 1. All right, coming up right after this break, my college roommate, John Peterson, one of my closest friends in college. I haven't talked to him in a long time. It's sad. That's my fault. But he was on the coaching route. He was a basketball coach for many years. Did not make it to the big time at all. But we talked about the tournament. We talked about why he didn't keep coaching. It's a tough business. And some of the absolutely insane ways he made ends meet as a restricted earnings coach early on in his career. We'll talk to my college roommate right after this. You know, we're driven by the search for better. When it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't help you just hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. This according to a recent Indeed survey. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Zabe. Just go to Indeed.com/Zabe right now and support the show by saying you heard about it right here on this podcast. Indeed.com/Zabe. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. All right, you are live on the podcast. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, including the time you helped me steal that iron-reinforced rim from the local elementary school to put up on the back of our Sabato Tardi apartment complex.
Would you want to talk about the stolen wheelchair, too, or
no? No, no. In this day and age, we'll get canceled for that, by the way. You saw what happened to Daniel Briere's kid, right? It wasn't stolen. It was used, but I think we put it back.
So funny. How you been?
I am doing good. It is UCSB week here as I get in touch with my former roommate, John Peterson, better known as Coach Peterson, who I last remember was the coach at Ohlone Junior College, but something tells me you're not there anymore.
I am not there anymore.
How long have you been gone?
I'm not there anymore. 8 years.
Fucking A. God damn it. Yeah. I suck.
Been a while.
I suck. You were my roommate in college. How do you not know your roommate in college? Do you never talk to him? I'm like, no, not very often. Not often as I should. So where are you now, JP?
I am in I'm in LA. I left the junior college to go to Loyola Marymount. Did 2 years there.
So you're at Loyola?
No, I got out of that too.
coached at Loyola.
Coached at Loyola Marymount for two.
Under who?
Got out. Mike Dunlap, who's now with the Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay.
And I left. I went to work for a startup doing basketball training franchises. Coached a little bit on the side. I coached my daughter's high school team for 3 years. And in the last 2 years, I've, in addition to working a real job, have helped at a Division II down here in L.A., Cal State, Dominguez Hills.
All right. So that, in addition to being one of the top hand models in all of Los Angeles, which has helped pay the bills.
That would be a great job.
Oh my God.
That would be a great job.
Just show your hands. So you still got your fingers in the coaching game.
Still got my fingers in the coaching game for okay. sure.
God, listen, this guy, Peterson, you have no idea, listeners. He and I, the stuff we did in college at UC Santa Barbara was great. Remember climbing up to the scoreboard at the Thunderdome when
after the UNLV win,
after they beat UNLV, and it was the only time UNLV had lost before they went on like a year and a half reign of terror across the whole fucking country.
That was awesome.
Oh God, that those were awesome. Great.
Hey man, they're getting crowds like that again, you know.
I know. I was trying to remember the last time I was back on campus, and I'm thinking it was the last time I called a game there in 94.
Not even the same, remotely the same institution. It's unbelievable
really?
What they've done there. Yeah, it's crazy. It's
you,
awesome.
You mean it awesome, crazy in terms of the facility and the buildings, or?
All of it, yeah. Facilities, the buildings, the whole thing.
Okay.
IV looks totally different. I mean, it's
IV
it's
being nuts. Isla Vista, the student slum right next to campus. It's the most densely packed population square mile west of the Mississippi, even more than LA, because it's literally like 18,000 kids, right, Johnny? That's in a one square mile.
Yeah, with quite a bit of money behind them these days, I have a feeling. A little bit different than the late 80s, early 90s.
Really?
Yeah, it's not cheap to go to school there anymore.
Was it
There's
cheap?
There's no more $325 per quarter fee, my friend.
Was it cheap when you went as a California state resident?
Oh, literally $325 a quarter, $375, something like
what?
That.
What?
That's
that's what it cost you to go to UC Santa Barbara.
That's what it cost me to go per quarter.
Oh my God! I think
less
I got
$400.
I got to ask my mom today what it cost for them to send me out of state. Good thing
it
I didn't.
I would bet you it's not even close to what somebody in state is paying now.
So no in chance. State is higher than the out of state.
No,
from 86
probably. Yeah.
No. I'm saying in state now
higher than 80, yeah,
is sure. higher than my out of state fee back in 86.
For sure.
Okay, so you paid $325 a quarter, you said, and there was three quarters. We were on the quarter system, which sucked. So we did three quarters on, one quarter off, and then you had to pay room and board, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean that's, you know,
that goes
nothing like it is now. Yeah.
No, exactly. Johnny and I were on the same floor in what was the dorm room?
Third floor, San Nick.
Yes, San Nicolas dorm, where they had a sand volleyball court, actually two of them, outside the building. And I believe that freshman year, we spent approximately 68% of our waking hours down and around that sand volleyball court.
And at least another 10 building beer pyramids out of Keystone, empty Keystone cans.
And Schaefer Light, with Rich Gillespie and Dusty Rhodes and Russ Hodges?
Maybe. I could picture
You can picture him. We should really look these guys up. So anyway, Coach Peterson, how'd you like the Elite Eight?
Man, great games. Great games. Highly entertaining. I know this isn't some hot take, but I just don't see how anybody beats UConn.
Oh, they are going through people like shit through a tin horn.
I mean, it is something else. They're so good.
What do you think of the fact
they're so good?
How do you feel though that it's pretty much an all Cinderella Final Four? Even though UConn's not quite, it is not. There's no brand names here. Even though UConn was a brand name under Calhoun, and they're making a comeback now with Hurley. I mean, this is more Cinderella type stories than most people are used to. Is it a good thing, bad thing, or is it just a thing?
I mean, I think for the fan, it's great. I mean, who wants to continue to see the same teams, you know,
right,
competing to go? I think it's awesome.
I mean, last year we had Duke in Kay's final run against Carolina. I mean, you can't fucking beat that, right, for the Final Four?
No.
But no. I don't think I'll watch any less of these games just because there's no Blue Bloods. I think they're all very entertaining, and I think they're all pretty hard to handicap, even though obviously UConn is, I think, the favorite.
Yeah, I would agree that UConn's a favorite. I would agree it's probably pretty hard to handicap, but I think the entertainment value, it for me anyway, is significantly higher.
All right,
I just think it's great watching them play.
So when you got into coaching, did you once think, I'm going to be a head coach in D1?
Absolutely. I can remember being at the Final Four where Weber, like in the second to top row, I was in my early 20s, 22, 23, 24. And, you know, when Weber called the timeout, thinking to myself, I'd love to be on this stage. 100%.
At what point in your career, because you coached at a junior college, had success there, at what point did you realize professionally, either this ain't going to happen or I don't have the stomach to do it? Because it's an incredible grind, you know?
No, it's a grind. Well, it's interesting, right? I mean, I was at a Division I, San Francisco, and then I went to a Division II, and we played in two national championship games, won one of them.
What was the Division II?
Metro State in Denver.
Right. Okay.
Played Kentucky Wesleyan, and I played Kentucky Wesleyan in back-to-back years, which is almost unheard of.
Okay.
They beat us in 99. We beat them in 2000. And so, you know, I had a little taste as an assistant of what it was like to, you know, make that journey to the last game of the year twice,
so wait,
which is pretty cool.
You started as an assistant at USF?
Yeah.
What
90, right out of Santa Barbara.
What number 92? Assistant? Number third assistant?
Dude, I was the restricted earnings guy living in San Francisso making $3,000 a year. No bullshit.
$3,000
a year for 5 years. Yeah.
Well, that's where your hand modeling began, and that's how you
were able to make it. I had every side hustle you could possibly imagine.
You know, I tell the youngsters I work with now in radio, I go, you know, they used to have a position in college basketball that literally said restricted earnings coach.
And restricted earnings coach.
And they're like,
not only did they restrict your pay, they restricted the number of years that you can receive that pay.
they're like, hey, don't get comfortable on this $3,000 a year.
No, that's right. I mean, and you could pay up to $15,000 a year.
Wow. Now you're living really large right there.
Now you're living large, man. I have a friend from college who owned a ticket brokerage, a pretty successful one. He just sold it. And back then, you know, if you were going to buy a concert ticket, you know, you had to go to Warehouse Records and stand in line if you wanted to get in the first five, whatever. So one of my side hustles was I would go sleep on Geary Boulevard outside of the warehouse waiting for U2 to go on sale or whatever, the Stones, so I could be one of the first five guys in line to buy tickets that he would pay me a small fee for. I was doing stuff like that to pay my rent. It was all time.
And then
it ain't the same anymore, man. Guys get into this business now. They aren't doing that, I guarantee you.
Restricted earnings. Speaking of restricted, was it you that taught me the phrase restricting my shit?
Yeah. Restricting my shit.
Tell that story again. That's the best. Go.
Yeah, I know that's a JUCO deal, right? You know, coach, you're restricting my shit. You're not letting me play my game.
It was a high school teammate of yours, right?
Yeah, it might have been. Mike Guida, possibly. Restricting my shit. Coach is restricting my shit.
He got pulled from the game, and you like looked over at him on the bench and asked him what happened, and the simple answer was, man, coach is restricting my shit.
My shit. Absolutely, baby. Absolutely.
And they did.
Hey, that was the impetus for the transfer portal right there.
Just took a long time to get to where we are now. So remind me what the thinking was behind restricted earnings. Was it to keep the bigger programs from layering in more and more highly paid coaches to get an advantage?
Quite possibly. I mean, I think so. You know, there was a class action lawsuit filed. I mean, I was a part of it. You know, the class won. Yeah, I mean, I got
what'd you make?
20 grand. I don't know, like 20 grand. It wasn't much.
It's not bad.
Might enough. That might have been enough to pay for my wedding. but there was no money in it at all. I mean, that's why I left USF to go to, I was at my fifth year. I had to leave. And so I went to Metro State.
So you did you did 5 years at $3,000 a year. Sleeping
yeah.
on
I mean,
the.
I had side hustles.
Listen,
yeah, I mean,
listen.
Literally, that's what the paycheck was for USF.
I know that, but my point is, and this is in admiration and awe of you and everyone else that did this, your passion for the game and the career is that you did that for 5 years. It's fucking inhuman, you know, as you dusted off.
Inhuman.
Yeah, as you dusted off the grime from the street to San Francisco, sleeping out overnight
yeah, no
for
doubt.
Tickets, and then putting on a suit to go coach, you know, low-level D1 basketball.
I had, at one point, I was telling somebody this the other day, they had a fitness center on campus, a really nice one, actually. You know, Olympic size indoor pool. I mean, it's a massive facility.
Like, why don't you live there?
My day would be I had a quote unquote manager's position in there. So I would open the facility at 4, you know, make sure the lights are on, the alarms are off, whatever. Staff would come in to check people in. I'd work there till like 10. I'd go to the office, do whatever I had to do in the office. I'd go to practice. And then at 3, I went to a private school in Pacific Heights where I was a quote unquote gym monitor until 9 for CYO practices, right?
Wow.
That had benefits, I might add. That was the beauty of that job.
Right.
And then I'd go back to campus to do study table from 9 to 11 and then put it all on repeat. I did that four days a week, Monday through Thursday.
Wow. For how many years?
Yeah.
For 5 years almost?
Oh, God. Probably 3 of those years.
Okay.
Yeah, too many years for sure.
So was it perceived for your career that, well, shit, you're leaving from a low D1 to a D2? Did you feel like if I'm ever going to make it, you know, in D1, that, you know, this is not the right direction? Or was it just, hey, it happens?
I mean, it just happens. I mean, I wanted to coach. I was out of time. I had no choice. I
sure.
literally... there was a guy named Steve Eggers who's now retired. He was the head coach at LMU, ironically, at one point. But he had been at Pepperdine as an assistant, and he got the Eastern Washington job. And I remember flying to Spokane, staying the night at Mark Few's house, getting up the next morning, driving to Cheney, hand-delivering my resume to Steve, had a five-minute meeting, drove to the airport and flew back. Didn't get the job.
Oh, my God.
I mean, yeah, no, that's literally the kind of stuff I was trying to do to just get whatever I could get.
Five-minute meeting. You spent how much money?
And he and I are great. Yeah, who knows, right? I don't know. I don't even know how much money.
But still, yeah, it was hundreds and hundreds of dollars you didn't have.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, no doubt.
So you're at Ohlone College. You're the head coach there. You had pretty good success at the junior college level. Go ahead, tell us your run there.
14 years. I mean, it was great. I mean, listen, there's nothing better. The two things I think that everybody
Did you win there?
Yeah, we won like 70% of our games, something like that.
Any titles?
We had five. I choked. Our best chance. We were the number one team in the state all year and got beat in the Sweet or in the Elite Eight.
Oh man, don't say so you choked. Happened.
Nah, I blew it. We were up 12 with 16 to go, and
oh.
You know, I was arrogant. I was arrogant, and I'd love to have that game back. I had some pretty good players in that group too, like 4 or 5 Division I guys on that team. Yeah, we had great runs. We won a couple of league titles, a couple of Elite Eights, which in California is kind of that's the state tournament, right? Four from the north, four from the south.
Sure.
Four, five, Sweet 16s.
Does that?
That was great. And go ahead.
Does that experience of blowing a double digit lead in a big game make you more sympathetic towards guys like Rodney Terry, who was just offered, by the way, the head job?
Did he get it today? Yeah, good.
He was offered it. I haven't seen that he has said yes. I would hope he would, but, you know.
Anybody that can go to Fresno State after Tark and win games deserves whatever job he can get, in my opinion. Yeah, I totally feel sympathetic. I mean, if you've been a head coach, you've blown it. So, you know.
At some point.
You've blown it. At some point, you've blown it, and at some point, you've gotten really lucky. So, I mean, it's just part of the deal. It happens.
Right.
You know.
Rodney Terry was at Fresno State from 2011 to 2018.
And won games, right? I mean, he had like 4 20-win seasons, did he not?
I think so. For anyone who has never had the pleasure of going to Fresno, California, let me tell you, it is a certified shithole of nothingness. Yeah. The likes of which you're going to want to flee from as quickly as possible, right in the middle of the state. Good people, make no mistake, but just a miserable city in the middle of California farmland.
No, and when they've got it going, they all come out.
That's true.
I mean, they come out, but if you don't have it going, you're getting 3,000 people a night in a 15,000 seat facility, and not so much fun.
So that ended in 2018. He went to UTEP for 3 years, and then that washed out, and then he joined as an assistant 2 years ago, and then, you know, thanks to one late night of drinking between Chris Beard and his fiance, all of a sudden he gets handed a loaded ass team, and damn if you didn't almost take him to the Final Four. That was tough. What happened to Texas in the second half?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, a head coach's job is to make sure guys get the shots you want them to take, and that's their job. Whether they go in or not, I mean, that's not up to the coach.
Right.
It's up to the player.
But it's still up to you to try to, you know when to manage your timeouts, try to staunch the bleeding, to maybe do something different, to show a different look, you know, to put a guy in to give you a spark, right?
Yeah, but I mean, all those things are so easy to talk about after the fact. Right. You're in the moment.
Oh, yeah.
That's a whole different deal.
It's going fast. And you know, give credit to Miami. They just didn't fucking miss in the second half.
No, I mean, it's a shot maker's deal, right? And if you got guys that can make shots, it's life's so much easier. You're infinitely better as a coach.
Yeah.
If you've got guys that can make shots, especially tough shots, contested shots, stuff like that. I mean, you watch that D2. I mean, I don't know if you pay attention to it or not, but you know, the Division II championships, you know, two teams that play at breakneck speed and just loaded with guys that make shots.
Yeah.
And scores in the hundreds, I think. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. By the way,
they're everywhere.
The Miami story with Larrañaga is fascinating to me on a number of levels. Larrañaga was just a lifer in the biz himself. Finally gets discovered, gets on a rocket ship at George Mason, goes to the Final Four, tries to negotiate a bigger deal. He get a little bit more money, stayed at George Mason for a couple years after that 06 Final Four run, but then gets a deal from Miami. And everyone thought it was almost like a pseudo-retirement package, like, oh, yeah, he'll take their money. And then, like all old guys, he'll retire, you know, somewhere in South Beach and call it a career. And he continues to get it done. Now, it doesn't hurt, Petey, that he's got big nil energy going on down at Miami. And
it doesn't hurt at all.
Doesn't hurt at all. I read this story in The Athletic about notably two guys, Isaiah Wong, their leading scorer, and Nigel Pack, their point guard.
Right.
So apparently this booster down at Miami, John Ruiz, who's founded this company called Life Wallet, who the fuck knows what they do, right? He's rich. He put three kids through Miami, big supporter of the program, dedicated. He said, I got $10 million. I want to pour it back into, you know, Miami Athletics. And because there's this new NIL deal, we can pretty much cheat like Nevin Shapiro once did, but the cheating will be legal at Miami.
Absolutely.
So I guess Pat got reportedly, nobody knows, Petey, $750,000.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And yeah. Apparently, according to this story, Isaiah Wong was only making $100,000, and they said Isaiah Wong's agent, because you're now allowed to have those, threatened to pull his guy to another school if he didn't get a raise.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a different,
I mean, it's the new way
of doing things. So Barkley was on 60 Minutes last night saying this is terrible. Terrible for the sport, and it's going to lead to just 20 or 25 teams that rule everything. Now, this is a bad year for that argument because look at the Final Four, but he may not be wrong in that once the reshuffling settles down, it will be the 20 to 25 richest schools that dominate year in, year out. What do you believe?
How is it any different than when Charles played and the 20 or 25 richest schools dominated the sport?
Are you probably right?
I mean, they didn't
right.
have NIL, but you're telling me those guys didn't get paid? Come on now.
They did get paid, They also had other benefits of going to the big schools.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I just...
Okay, so it's going to be more the same.
Basically, it's the same. Now everybody can do it as opposed to the teams that had all the money.
Right.
Everybody can do it.
Yeah.
And some people, some programs, I think, pool their money. So if you and I are on a roster at, Podunk U, and, there's $500,000 that, four guys have gotten, they're splitting that amongst everybody on the roster. So there's no issues in the locker room.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of ways to skin this cat. For sure, but it's not. I don't think it's going anywhere.
No, I don't think so either. The funniest part of the story is.
And I'm a big believer. I think you should be able to make money off your name, your image, and your likeness. I don't see why you shouldn't have an opportunity to do that.
But
I really don't.
Do you really think there's like Isaiah Wong billboards down in Miami? Do you think there's Pack commercials that are worth $750,000?
Well, no. I mean,
so in other words,
it's like, hey, well, listen, it's the value of anything is what somebody's willing to pay for it.
True, but this is a case of they're just kind of pooling money and they're labeling it name, image, likeness, and so they're it's a bit
but
of an
it's
end.
It's no run. Different. It's no different than pooling the money and slipping a kid cash.
No, it's not. It's just it's gonna be a wild time, And the poor coaches that do fight through all that you have to fight through to get there, they have to re-recruit their own guys every fucking
year. It's the most important.
It's
the most important part of the recruiting process now is your own team.
Yeah.
At the same time, coaches are free to leave whenever they want to leave.
That is true.
Administrators are free to get rid of coaches whenever they want to get rid of coaches. You can look at the argument a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Part of me
is... I think what it does is, especially you take the NIL out of it, but you look at the transfer portal. To a large extent, it's leveled the playing field a little bit.
We're seeing that now.
The group that gets hurt is the high school player. I was with a Division I head coach a couple weeks ago, and who had a really good year, didn't make a tournament, but they did really well. He's like, I might take one or two high school kids, but why would I take a high school kid if I can go get, a kid that's been at, Xavier for 2 years? I would take that all day, every day.
Well, okay, but you still need new blood coming in. I mean, the high school guys are still going to be coming.
Yeah, but the issue is if you bring in high school guys and you really develop them, somebody else is taking them.
Oh.
Who was it that said somebody just said it the other day. It was Dusty May or one of those guys. Like, his guys are being recruited right now.
Huh. Interesting.
As transfer students. Yeah, no, it's nonstop, man.
So you're saying the smart coaches are like, we'll let some other coach do the hard work of coaching a high school kid into being a college player, and then we'll just go poach him.
Hey, I'm coaching in the Division II league, player of the year in the league, 6'7" kid at Sonoma State, who is really talented and a no-brainer. Like, probably WCC would be the highest level, but you know, Big West guy, Big Sky guy for sure, right? Okay. Division I guy, no-brainer. He was recruited all year long.
Wow.
There were guys recruiting him all year long. I mean, whether it's through a third party or his parents or his AAU coach or whatever, and, you know, jumps in the portal and he's out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he could have stayed and probably been, you know, top five all-time leading scorer at that institution if he wanted to be.
Yeah. All right, real quick, you said your daughter plays basketball. You coached her. How old is she?
She's a sophomore in college now.
Is she playing in college?
She's at Smith, which is in Massachusetts, who lost in the Final Four, and was the number one overall seed. But she didn't play. She had a bad concussion at the end of her freshman season. Couldn't play this year.
But she's on the basketball team
next year. Yeah,
on the basketball team at Smith College in Massachusetts, all the way on the other side of the country from you.
Ironically, a guy I lived with for 2 years in Santa Barbara is a maxillofacial surgeon and lives in the same city.
And so therefore he's loaded and pays for your flights out to see her?
I wish, but he does let me stay at his nice house. He doesn't pay for the flights, but he does let me stay at the crib.
Well, that's very nice. That's awesome. So with that said, I'll be perfectly honest in saying I don't generally care for the women's game, but I am in awe of this Caitlin Clark gal who just went nuclear last night for Iowa to propel them into the Final Four.
She can hoop.
She really can.
I watched almost all of those Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games, at least a little bit of them, each of those games. There's some very, very, very good coaches and some very, very, very good players.
There's no question.
It's fun.
There's no question that the state of the art of the women's game continues to get better and better. And it's obviously not just, you know, the women's players that inspired these girls like Sue Bird or Diana Taurasi, et cetera, or Breanna Stewart. It's also the Steph Curry effect. Because Caitlin Clark is the female Steph Curry. She shoots it so well with such great form. I remember, Petey, when once upon a time in the women's game, when they would shoot a three, it was a heave, you know? Now it's stop and pop, step back, stupid range. Is that a problem? Should I not have made that 30-footer? It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. And yet, for some reason this year, I believe Duke played a game against South Carolina where they played with the wrong ball for a whole half and didn't realize it.
Or even the whole Final Four fiasco last year. You know,
right, about the
mass, right?
Yeah. It was also bad. Apparently in Vegas, one of the teams had to move out of the Luxor because their rooms were shit. Yeah. And I go, I'm like, that checks out because I went to the Luxor on a, quote, free trip for the station this past winter for the Pro Bowl, and it ruined Vegas for me. I'm still in therapy. It was so awful.
Luxor was great back in, like, 93. I'm not sure the Luxor is a go-to in Vegas any longer.
The Suxor, exactly. All right, top three Peterson moments in college all time. I'm going to give them to you right now. You ready?
Okay. Yeah, I'm ready.
Number three, you and I playing on our intramural team. This was the B-League team, I believe. You were on multiple teams. You had your fraternity team, but you also slummed it on a B-League team, and I fucking love playing with you because you were a very good player, and I was just a guy that could, you know, not embarrass himself. So that was fun as shit. Never forget that.
Yeah, but you were kind of a Bill Laimbeerish, willing to step up, fight a guy, especially when it got to the floor hockey segment of the intramural schedule.
Oh, yeah. Sure. There's no doubt. Our floor hockey trips up to Sacramento and one down to San Diego were the stuff of legend. That was fun as shit. The number two moment was easily climbing up to the scoreboard after UCSB beat UNLV. But the number one moment.
I can't wait to hear number one.
Number one had to be going to John Peterson's boyhood home. up in Fairfield, California. Yeah. Well, not with the Rent-A-Cop at the JUCO nearby. But no, this was us playing basketball in your driveway. I got to play on the nine foot hoop in Johnny's driveway. Father was a judge, the Honorable Judge Peterson, and you guys had a carport, as I recall, not even a garage,
but carport. That's exactly right. Yeah.
With a 9 foot hoop on it, and that's where you learned to play. And we had a fucking blast there. Duncan, I was still young and spry enough that I could get up just enough to throw it down. Not as good as you could.
Those were good times, man. Those were good times.
God damn, the best. Can you still dunk?
Those were good times.
Can you still dunk a basketball?
Hell no.
Can you still dunk a tennis ball at least?
No. Come on, no way. No way. Even if you put it at 8 feet, I'd be worried about pulling something. No chance, dude. No chance.
All right, Johnny. No, it's great. Good to connect with you, and I will promise
great
this
catching
is
up, my man.
At least it'll be once a year for you. All right?
Okay, that sounds awesome.
All right, buddy. See ya.
All right. See you, Xavier.
Great to connect with Petey, as I call him. He was a blast to be a roommate with and a friend with in college, and it's too bad that we are separated by 3,000 miles, but you know what? I should take it upon myself. And make it a point to connect with him and do something with him whenever possible, because we had great times back there at the Harvard of the West, UC Santa Barbara. We'll end on this. And for years, I have looked at these little green bottles of eye drops and have thought to myself, why in the hell are these things price the way they are? Why do they cost? Why do two tiny bottles of eye drops cost like $12 for just an ounce, if that, in each bottle? To me, it's been one of the most insanely priced things. But in the back of my head, I said, well, you know, I bet there's a lot of lawyers. But there's a lot of lawyers and there's a lot of quality control that has to go into these eye drops because, well, it's a very simple thing. You know, just get a nice little eye drop that is sanitized and sufficiently viscous and gooey to make your eyes nice and wet when you wake up in the morning. And I only use them in the morning pretty much to wet my eyes, but you have to have them so that they're not going to do any injury to anyone or any harm to anyone because, well, it is your eyeball. It's a sensitive organ. You only have two of them. They're kind of important. And yeah, you don't want things going wrong. But then I thought, well, how bad does a batch of eye drops have to be to really do damage to people? And now we know the answer. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has identified 68 patients in 16 states recently who were infected with a rare strain of drug-resistant Pseudomonas aeruginosa. Aeruginosa, Pseudomonas aeruginosa, a strain of drug-resistant bacteria that had never been reported in the United States. Most patients who reported this infection reported using artificial tears. Many patients used different brands, but one brand shot through as the most common denominator. That would be Esricare artificial tears, as the brand most commonly reported. Whew. Thank God I don't use that. I use the green bottle, which I think is Allergan's. Not sure. Anyway, reported adverse events included infections of the cornea, ugh, infections of the bloodstream, ugh, infections of the respiratory tract, and infections of the urinary tract. Yuck. There were 8 reports of lost vision, like I don't see as well now, or it's temporary, or it's coming back. And 4 reports of surgically removed eyeballs. What? Oh my God. 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 It was also reported that one person died from the infection. Oh my God. Something tells me now I'm just going to gut it out in the morning. I'm going to jam my eyeballs open, wide open, feel the sting and the burn of the cold morning air start to tingle my dry corneas, and then have my own body go to work producing the tears necessary to, after a good 20 or 30 seconds, go blink, 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 blink. And that way I won't have to worry about eyeball removal. Yikes. And now you know the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. That's why those eye drops cost as much as they do. And something tells me that after this, the price of them is only going up further. That is a wrap for me today. Thank you so much for listening.
Why did I have to hear that part at the end? Like, you can't end on something uplifting.
Well, listen, we are an all-purpose podcast. We're here to inform. We're here to protect the public. We're here to let you know what's going on in the world. It's not always just, you know, sunshine and roses, people. Okay? Thanks for listening. Tell a few friends. Rate and review, as always. Thank you so much. Have a great Tuesday, everybody, and we will see you next time.
Have a nice day.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Make March Madness a moneymaker with MyBookie. Getting started is easy. Visit MyBookie online and use promo code ZABE to receive a deposit bonus up to $1,000. Grab your extra funds now and for a limited time, claim a free entry into the $150,000 MyBookie Madness Bracket Contest for a chance at the big money. If you're the type of guy who likes to fill out multiple brackets to get an advantage, you can do that too. The price of entry is less than an Uber, all for a shot at life-changing amounts of moolah. With so many brands to choose from, you need a platform that makes it simple to bet and simple to win and simple to get paid, like MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.